Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. Last week, we began our conversation with Rachel Laser. She's the president and CEO of Americans for the Separation of Church and State. Our conversation had to do with the Religious Liberty Task Force that has been formed by Jeff Sessions and the Department of Justice. And when we ended, there was still so much more to talk about. We invited her to join us again today. A little bit about our guest. Rachel is a lawyer, advocate, and strategist who has dedicated the last two decades of her life to make the country inclusive for all Americans. She has a proven track record of uniting both faith and secular leaders and advocacy organizations to make tangible progress on some of the most important issues of our time. Previous positions she's held include serving as the Deputy Director of the Religious Action Center of Reform Judaism. Rachel also directed the Culture Program at Third Way, a Washington, D.C. think tank. In that capacity, she helped draft the first-of-its-kind Common Ground Abortion Bill to be introduced jointly by pro-life and pro-choice members of Congress. And she's served as legal counsel at the National Women's Law Center. She has degrees from both Harvard and the University of Chicago, and we welcome once again to Common Threads, Rachel Laser. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, nice to be back.
Yeah, nice to have you back. Listen, last week, I remember that we were in the process of talking about this task force, and you were giving us some examples of why you are concerned about the task force, even though they have not come out with any findings or directives yet. You say that because of what we've seen in the past year and a half under the Trump administration, that you just suspect that this is going to go in a particular direction. Could we back up a little bit from where we left off, if you can remember, and give us a couple of examples of just exactly why you hold this view?
Sure. So of why I hold the view that it's situated within numerous other actions from the Trump-Pence administration to deny religious liberty for all?
Yes. Yeah, there you go. You have such a sweet way of putting it.
Yeah, I mean, we had talked about sort of who was invited to the summit and those really being representatives of the religious right only, and some of the words that were said about the danger of this sort of cultural change of today that, you know, needed to be challenged and eradicated. But yes, this task force was actually put in place to enforce what we call a blueprint for discrimination that the Department of Justice released last year that allows taxpayer dollars to be used not just to discriminate in hiring, which is terrible, but also suggested that they could be used to discriminate in who you serve and what services you provide. So that's very scary, right? That's like gay teenagers being turned away from homeless shelters and women who are victims of sex trafficking and maybe worried about being pregnant, not being able to be taken for reproductive care, things of that nature. And I was saying that that's just really the DOJ blueprint for discrimination is just, again, one of a series of actions that we've seen so far out of this administration. Here's some others that just to sort of add to the list. The Department of Health and Human Services created an Office of Conscience and Religious Freedom, which is, it should be about preventing discrimination, not sanctioning it, but that is intended to, and with that, I should say, they also put out a request for information. They asked to know how current laws are burdening your religious freedom. You know, and there's already a Health and Human Services Office of Civil Rights that exists to take such complaints. And they've already been dealing with religious discrimination, mostly, frankly, complaints from religious minorities. Although, of course, you know, the government should, and as Americans United does, protect the religious liberty of all people, including Christians. You know, so that was never at issue, but they created this special office, which is about, you know, collecting these additional complaints for where people feel burdened by government protections, right? And basically what we're talking about is non-discrimination bills, we're talking and provisions, and we're talking about the provision of health care, which brings me to another final rule that came out of the Health and Human Services Administration under Trump and Pence, which are regulations that would let bosses and universities use their personal religion to deny all of their employees and students access to birth control. You know, that went into effect immediately in the way the administration implemented the rule. And we've actually sued, and then we sued again now. We sued them and Notre Dame under this provision. But again, this interim final rule is really about denying birth control to women in the name of religion.
Can you tell me a little bit about how that works? How do they keep birth control from women, say, at a college?
Because the Affordable Care Act under Obama, what some call Obamacare, required as a preventive service birth control for women, that women should have access to birth control as part of their preventive care. And what this administration did is they've interpreted the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, to mean that there are all these personal exemptions. If think of Hobby Lobby, right? Think of Notre Dame. You know, just trying to provide concrete examples. Right, Notre Dame, which has many students of many different faiths and many employees too, you know, of many different faiths, now being able to say, you know, because we're a Catholic based university, that we're preventing all women from having access to birth control coverage, you know, who are part of this campus. So basically, what we're talking about is, we believe in an America where American law, like, we need a shared moral and ethical code, right? I mean, some say there's over 2,000 different religious denominations today in America. It's chaos, right? It's great, it's beautiful, and it's chaos. So what's going to govern in America? And what we've agreed in this country is we're not going to be a country that's governed by anyone's religion, right? We're going to be governed by our shared moral code, which we pass in the form of American law. Right? And so we have these protections in place, the provision of birth control coverage that comes with Obamacare. And now what the Trump-Pence administration is trying to do is say, we're going to actually carve out an exemption for, and basically it's empowering really one more narrow-minded religious view on birth control. So it's not really about carving out an exemption for everybody's religion. It's like saying we're going to actually give precedence to those who religiously, or at least who claim religiously, right? There's some debate about whether this is more of a political movement or, you know, a religious movement that's really political versus a religious movement that's really religious. But we'll leave that question on the table. Right, so it's really about empowering and giving precedence to one viewpoint in America over what's American law. Right, it's the same thing with the Baker in Colorado, where Colorado passed through their state legislature a public accommodations bill that says we don't want discrimination against gay and lesbian people in our state. That was passed. That was their shared Colorado code. In fact, you know, sadly, you know, not every state has that. You know, but they do. And so then what Jack Phillips, the baker, wanted to say is, I want to carve out an exemption just based on my personal religious beliefs. He happens to be a fundamentalist Christian, and deny Charlie Craig and David Mullins their wedding cake, deny them their dignity in the store and deny them their wedding cake. So it's about putting one religious group, sort of giving one religious group power over the rest of us, right? Imposing one religious group's views on the rest of us, on students at Notre Dame, on employees at Notre Dame, on whoever goes in the bakeries of Colorado. And that's what we at Americans United for Separation of Church and State are invested in fighting, right? We're invested in an America where it's not just religious liberty for some, where it's religious liberty for all of us. And what that means is no one is using their religion to cause harm to other people, but instead we're sort of protecting, in the way that it was meant to be, people's ability to congregate together, to believe and pray how they want. But guess what? When we come together in our public spaces, the way this American experiment is going to work is if we all agree to abide by American law and not to put our personal, not to use our personal belief systems to impose harm on others. America can't work that way.
Speaking of birth control for a moment, I think, don't I remember that Sessions used as an example, he said that Obamacare or the government was forcing nuns to distribute birth control or something like that, which is completely false. Can you tell us why that's false?
Yeah, no, that's the Little Sisters of the Poor case. I mean, here's the deal. And actually, this brings up Brett Kavanaugh, which is another, which of course is the nominee by the Trump-Pence administration to fill Justice Kennedy's seat. Judge Kavanaugh sort of is incredibly conservative on church-state separation. In fact, he believes that the metaphor of the wall of the separation of church and state is the wrong metaphor as a matter of law and history. He does not believe in the separation of church and state, but and it's related to this this concept of forcing, you know, this false concept of forcing nuns to provide birth control. Here's the deal. The birth control regulations under the Obama administration as part of this Affordable Care Act carved out a complete exemption for churches, right, as is always the case, right? So churches do whatever they want. Churches, synagogues, mosques, you know, houses of worship, they're out. But then there was a big debate about what about religiously affiliated groups, you know, that may have an issue. You know, and again, you know, groups that serve people of different faiths, that employ people of different faiths, that are getting government money, you know, or not. So what about those groups? Like, what are we going to do in terms of the birth control regulations with those groups? And what the administration decided on was what they called an accommodation. So the accommodation said, okay, we understand that you may, you know, if you really feel like you have a problem, you know, covering birth control, even though it's not going to cost you anything, but if you really feel morally like you have a problem, here's what you can do. You can sign a one-page waiver, and then we will have the insurance company deal directly with the woman to make sure that she gets it. In other words, you can sign a waiver, and you're out. And what religiously affiliated groups like Little Sisters of the Poor did is they sued, and they said, that is way too onerous. That signing the waiver, we're still complicit. We don't like it. That's what this sort of claim is about. And Brett Kavanaugh actually was on the D.C. Circuit when a similar case came to light, you know, because he's obviously been a D.C. Circuit judge for a while, called Priests for Life, same idea. And he basically said in his dissent, not agreeing with the D.C. Circuit actually, he said that religion should carve out an exemption. Religion should be able to be used to cause harm, to deny things like birth control to women. He disagreed with 8 of 9 circuits that way. So he's really out of the mainstream. 8 of 9 circuits have said, you know what? We think it's okay to have a waiver signed.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of gets the group out of it. It's a reasonable way of dealing with this and making sure that women still have access to this important health care. That our government has decided and our Congress has decided should be available. So that's what he meant. And that's another reason why Brett Kavanaugh is so dangerous. It was hardly a surprise to us. All 4, you know, finalists that were being considered for the Supreme Court spot of Justice Kennedy were terrible on church-state separation. So think about the timing of the Religious Liberty Task Force, too. And, you know, the Brett Kavanaugh announcement, obviously it wasn't up to the Trump administration when Justice Kennedy was going to announce that he would resign. But, you know, you could definitely say that the timing around the Religious Liberty Task Force announcement was geared to the midterm elections.
Yes,
and
yes.
It's a lot about pandering to that white Christian evangelical base of Trump's, you know? And I mean, you could say it's a cynical use of religion for partisan political purposes, right?
One could say that.
One valid interpretation of why this happened now.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Threads on WGVU-FM. I'm Fred Stella, and with me today is Rachel Laser. She's the president and CEO of Americans for the Separation of Church and State, and we are talking about the Religious Liberty Task Force. So there are two people who apparently will be heading the task force. One is Jesse Panuccio, and the other, Beth Williams. Who are they? Do you know?
Well, I know more about Panuccio than I do about Beth Williams. I mean, I think she's the assistant AG for the Office of Legal Policy or something. So obviously she's part of this administration and conservative. But Jesse Panuccio was a lawyer for supporters of Proposition 8 in California, which, of course, was California's same-sex marriage ban. So he comes out of a sort of he comes from a history of thwarting LGBTQ equality in this country. And he's one of the two leaders of the task force, which is, you know, not surprising and obviously not remotely promising.
Sure. One thing that Jeff Sessions said when introducing the task force, he said, "We've had senators question political nominees on religious dogma." I don't even know. I mean, I know what it means, but I don't ever recall that. Is that true?
Yes. There was an incident. It was actually before I came to Americans United for Separation of Church and State, where Senator Dianne Feinstein on the Judiciary Committee was questioning a very, very sort of conservative, sort of fundamentalist judge nominee for a lower court about her views on, she had talked about needing to recuse herself from a case or something as a Catholic, and it made Senator Feinstein worry that she was going to have a hard time sort of not bringing her religion to her post as judge. And she used those words that really became a lightning rod, particular among, you know, in the fundamentalist community about, you know, discrimination based on religion coming from liberals.
Mm.
So I think that's what the reference was to.
Do you think that Senator Feinstein was prudent in this concern?
You know, I think it's really delicate to use the word dogma, although I myself use it at times. I mean, again, it's, you know, sort of true believers who are, you know, taught certain things from their religious house of worship aren't, let's just say, even people, many people who, you know, are taught bad things about Jews like me, you know, and bad things about gay and lesbian people, about transgender people, bad things about women who've had abortions and things, aren't bad people, you know. And, you know, I would argue that those beliefs are very harmful, you know, that they harbor. But I think that it's a delicate and fine line often when you accuse someone, for example, of being bigoted, or, you know, I think dogma, obviously put on a set of religious beliefs has very, you know, judgmental negative implications, you know, in a country where what we're saying is you can believe what you want, you know. So I think we have to be careful. I think what's happened, though, in recent years that sort of blurs the line is that there's been this effort by a politically conservative movement to use religion to advance their discriminatory agenda. And so I think what happens is when folks want to call those people out on using religion to really advance a political agenda that feels bigoted, discriminatory, that sometimes words like dogma are chosen to sort of describe that situation that then can be sort of turned easily into your, you know, bias against my, you know, here you are saying you're for all, religious freedom for all, but you're biased against my religion.
Right.
Does that
right.
make sense?
Sure, sure. I understand that. Two of the categories of people that you've mentioned who may be concerned about the task force, one was Muslims and the other the LGBT community, the T standing for transgendered. I'm curious on your take. Now, this I read this a couple of days ago, and I don't know if you've seen this. Apparently, there is a Muslim prisoner who does not want to be strip searched by a transgendered male. I'm wondering where you might fall on the on that issue.
Wow. Yes. I am for equality for all. It reminds me of sort of the bathrooms issue, which I know better than sort of, it's a little bit hard for me to speak about that particular incident because I don't know the particulars of it. But I can talk about something that very related, which is, you know, people often get very concerned about bathrooms and about transgender women. So those are folks who were biologically born men who have transitioned to what they feel is their true gender as women using bathrooms. And people get very nervous about how safe or not women will be in those bathrooms with transgender women being in the bathrooms alongside of them. And the interesting aspect of those cases is there's actually been not one incident ever reported that I've ever heard of a transgender woman harassing a woman, you know, in another woman in one of those bathrooms, in one of those states where, you know, where this has been contested. In fact, the way that it usually goes is the safety of the transgender woman is more imperiled because, you know, maybe she has an Adam's apple or maybe she's super tall and doesn't look like the standard definition of a woman and she's sort of more accosted, you know, than she is accosting others, which just hasn't happened. So I think that there's often, you know, a fear, you know, that is present and just based on a lot of misunderstanding, you know, and I think gender norms is such a sort of staple for so many people in their sort of their a binary thing in their way of thinking. I think less so for this next generation. I see it in my, you know, teenage kids, but, you know, I think for so many people that it can make you fearful. But when you start to sort of think harder about how these things play out and who feels particularly vulnerable, it's really often more the transgender person who is by far more vulnerable in the situation than not.
I'm going to ask you something that I probably shouldn't so close to the end of the show. We only have about 4 or 5 minutes. But I'm going to ask it anyway. One of the words we have not used today or when we spoke last week is dominionism. And that is, of course, the movement that strives for the recognition that this is, in fact, a Christian nation. I'm curious, have you ever openly debated somebody from that side?
You know, I haven't yet, and I do look forward to doing that. I really do, because, you know, I've thought about that a lot, right? I mean, there are lots of arguments that the other side brings to the table about tradition. And by the way, so does Brett Kavanaugh. You know, he argues that, you know, tradition is really important to look at. And, you know, what we know is that tradition, while it is important to examine, often sort of it advances sort of bias and privilege, you know, as it's existed over time. In America, we have two provisions in our Constitution and that are directly about religion, and there's no mention of Christianity or Jesus Christ. I mean, the U.S. Constitution, and I know that everyone knows this, but it bears restating, is a wholly secular document, you know, and it's got the First Amendment.
Holy with a W, holy with a W, right?
Very good. Very good. Yes, with a W.
Yeah.
So it's got the First Amendment, which bars laws respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. And it's got Article 6, which prohibits religious tests for public office. And over time, you know, when there have been amendments made to put religion back into our Constitution, they've inevitably been defeated. And, you know, our founding fathers like Jefferson and James Madison, you know, were part of, for example, taking away sort of the religiosity from Virginia and passing in 1786 a law guaranteeing religious freedom for all. So, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, we in our Constitution have a lot of ideals. And the truth about our country is we haven't always attained those ideals, right? We've fallen short very often. But they're ideals, and that's sort of what's so beautiful about our Constitution, that they, right, they set us up with a wonderful set of ideals. And it's very clear that those ideals are about a secular America, you know, and the dangerousness of, you know, merging church into state for both church and state. So, you know, there's this other thing, you know, that a lot of church-state separationists like to point to, the U.S. Treaty for Tripoli. Do you know about that one?
Oh, yeah, of course, where Jefferson said we're not a Christian country. And
right.
And unfortunately, I have to stop you right there. I told you this was not a good idea.
No, that's okay. You ended it in a good place. That's good.
Well, all good. Well, listen, very quickly, what's the website for Americans for Separation?
So it's AU for AmericansUnited.org. AU.org, or you can follow us on all social media at Americans United.
Wonderful. Well, Rachel, thank you so much for your time today and last week as well. It's been an enlightening experience.
You're welcome. Nice to speak with you.
I'm Fred Stella, and with me today has been Rachel Laser, the president and CEO of Americans for the Separation of Church and State. This is Common Threads, and we invite you back next week here on Common Threads.